Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 123. My name is John Morgan. I am in Mexico City, Mexico, for UFC Fight Night 114, Pettis versus Moreno. And I'm rolling solo this week. My man Cole Coffey is back home in Las Vegas. He'll be editing this bad boy once we get done with it, putting it all together. So he'll be involved like he always is, but not here with me by my side this week in Mexico. And always a shame. Not as much fun to have my man Cole Coffey around. I feel like we get to definitely do a little bit more in-depth stuff with our video coverage and that sort of thing. He's obviously a much more talented videographer than I am. But to be honest with you, USA Today was asking us to cut back on our travel budget a little bit with all the international events that have been coming up. And, well, UFC Fight Night 114 is not the biggest card on record. It's very Scotland-esque in many ways. I think there's some good fights in the card, but certainly isn't going to be the ratings killer. Certainly not going to bring us the type of hype that UFC 214 did last week in Anaheim. So, sucked it up. Did it solo. And got some fun people to talk to that I think will maybe not be as good as Cole Coffey. Not quite as entertaining, but perhaps a little bit more informative. So, anyway, listen, speaking of fun, having fun, I got to say, are you guys watching Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series? I hope you are, because I tell you what, I am having fun at these events. We're 4 weeks in now, and another great card on Tuesday night before we flew out here. It's kind of fun now. We're having fights. Tuesday night, Saturday night, Tuesday night, Saturday night. So I feel like I'm just in nonstop fight mode. No, not quite the pre-fight build-up or anything to the Tuesday night contender series, but certainly fun. You know, I've said it before, but being in there in that Ultimate Fighter gym is it's a unique experience, man. It really is weird just being in front of, you know, maybe 100 people, if that. And especially, you know, the fights have been good so far. These guys fighting for their UFC contracts. You know, they're calling it the ultimate interview in front of Dana White, and they have been some fantastic fights. No different this past Tuesday night. Main event, hopefully you've seen that highlight by now. Julian Marquez picked up a head kick knockout of Phil Hawes. Second round, just devastating. And again, with it being in that Ultimate Fighter gym, there's not a lot of sound to kind of drown out, I guess, the impact of the blow. Man, you could hear just the shin hitting the face. It was nasty, man. It was a brutal head kick. UFC was really cool about giving out the footage. They're trying some things. You know, they don't give out their finishes in UFC events for anything. They protect that video like it's sacred unless you're a broadcast partner. But here they distributed it out and said, do what you want with it. So we've got it out on YouTube. We put it out on the site as well. So definitely check that out if you haven't seen it. But and speaking of YouTube, make sure you subscribe to you. We're putting everything out on YouTube now. I know we've talked about that a little bit in the past, but I just finished up my Media Day interviews, and already some of them are on the site, but they're already on YouTube. So you can kind of get a little bit of a head start if you subscribe on YouTube. So, but listen, that main event, Phil Hawes, man, this is a guy I was high on for a long time. I mean, I certainly wasn't the only one. You know, Cole Coffey and I met him very early on in the launch of the MMA Roadshow, and the guy looked like he had it, but he's come up short in big situations. So, a tough spot for him to be in. I was actually talking to some people today, and I'll just keep their names off record because I don't know if they wanted it to be public. But, you know, they were saying, and I'll just say these are some coaches, basically, in the MMA space. But they were saying one of the things about the Dana White's Contender Series that scares them a little bit is that it's very high risk, high reward. And what they meant by that was that, and I hadn't thought about this, but there's some truth to it. It is awesome, right? I mean, you're coming in, you're getting 5-5, which $10,000 for a fight is not bad. It's better than most of these guys are getting on the regional stage. So it's a good opportunity to get a paycheck, and it's an opportunity to get in front of Dana White and potentially stamp your ticket right there for the UFC. But if you lose, like a Phil Hawes, for instance, Phil Hawes has been around. He's been a top prospect for a long time, but he loses in pretty spectacular fashion. How far away is he from the UFC now? Now that you've been there and you've been on the big stage, you had the opportunity to the boss sit there and watched you, and you got finished. You know, you think Phil Hawes is going to win two fights and be back in the UFC? No. I think the guy's probably got to win like 10 fights in a row. So it's kind of an interesting proposition. It's not that I don't like it. I mean, I love the concept. But it's more I hadn't really thought about the risk side of that, the flip side of that. And I thought it was pretty interesting to hear that some people were considering that way. And it's true. Because if you lose in front of the boss, man, you know, the ultimate job interview just went very bad there. Right? Now you may screw yourself out of a future opportunity. I don't think it would necessarily preclude guys, but it may make their road a little bit more challenging. So, something to think about. You know, they've talked about a lot of concepts with the show. One thing, and I don't know how they can pull it off, but, you know, they had teased a couple times, and I've talked to people behind it, that they're still trying to figure out whether it would work or not. But, you know, taking two guys that are about to lose their spot on the UFC roster and letting them kind of fight to stay on the roster, maybe it's a little insensitive or morbid to think about a, you know, loser leaves town type match, whatever, but I kind of like the concept. I mean, two guys like with everything on the line, you know, trying to keep themselves in the UFC, and you know, numbers are what they are with roster cuts and they have to be made, but I kind of like the idea. So I don't know if they'll do anything like that, but I've been told behind the scenes they're considering some opportunities like that. But I love the show. If you're not a Fight Pass subscriber, you know, I don't think it's that expensive, but I know money is tight. Not everybody has money to spend on things. So, you know, I'm not telling you to spend money you don't have, but if you do have Fight Pass and you're not taking advantage of watching these fights on Tuesday night, I think it's fun. The other thing is, too, just 2 hours of fights. 2 hours of fights. Digestible content. It's nice. Not trying to ask you to sit down and watch 6 or 7 hours of fights. So I really do love this stuff all the way around. I think they're definitely going to do more. You know, this initial run is 8. They were considering like a pilot run, and they were going to make a decision on whether or not they were going to do more. Every indication I've had from people behind the scenes is, yeah, absolutely, they're going to do more. Dana loves the show. Dana was so hyped. He came into the locker room on Tuesday night. They gave two contracts, and then he asked some guys to stick around. He asked three guys to stick around afterwards, and he actually went and told those three guys, hey, listen, we're going to get you, you know, we just don't have enough contracts for everybody, but we're going to get you on Looking for a Fight. So we'll put you on our other show. You know, keep you right there. Keep you part of the family, so to speak, right on the edge of getting into the UFC. And I thought that's pretty cool. You know, they said they'll try to match him up in a regional show and get him a fight there, and they'll come film around that. And one more chance to make it into the UFC. So I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, for Dana to stick around and to talk to these guys who aren't UFC fighters and to want to speak to them and tell them, I think that shows just how excited he is about this. And again, I think just kind of shows, again, his passion for the sport. You know, when people talk about he's leaving and he's doing this, you guys know how I feel about that. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he still has a lot of passion for what he's doing. And for him to want to stick around and talk to these prospects was pretty cool to see. And it's funny because we're right there in the room. Again, you know, hopefully you've been seeing these videos. Cole Coffey's been filming what he's been calling the weight and putting on YouTube. And it's been showing up on the site as well. We're putting it in the blue corner, if you haven't seen that. The blue corner, just for, if you have seen that on MMA Junkie and you're wondering what the hell it is, it's our blog within a blog. You know, it's kind of a little quirkier content, stuff that in the past we might not have put on the site because we were like, I don't know. But just little quick-hitting stuff so we can keep fresh content rolling through, you know, and just have some of this little quick-hittier stuff. We've got some IT that's being worked on right now. Eventually, that'll have kind of its own home on the page. You'll still see some of it on the front page as well, but it'll have kind of its own home. Some of it will go to the front page. Some of it won't. So anyway, something there. But if you've seen this thing, the weight, as Cole Coffey's been calling it, it's crazy because we're just sitting there in the kitchen of the Ultimate Fighter gym, along with these fighters who were waiting to find out if they made it into the UFC, and we were sitting there watching as they come in. And this time we actually got to see Dana White come in and talk to them and kind of encourage them a little bit and try to keep them moving down the right path. So it's really a unique experience. I think it's worth watching the whole thing if you haven't been watching it. So enough of my commercial plug for those guys. I will say, too, we did pick up while we were there this past week quick interviews with Cowboy Cerrone and Jason Knight as well. They were both there watching fights. And they were kind enough to stick around for a few minutes afterwards. And I think that's one thing they're going to try to do. The UFC PR staff is kind of a thank you to us for coming and covering the fights. Because, again, it's just more work. It's Tuesday night. It used to not be a busy night. Now it's a live fight night, you know. So it's more work for us. But I think they're going to try to help us with, you know, now the UFC fighters don't have to. But if they're watching the fights and you know, the PR can at least walk over to them and say, hey, Junkie's here. You want to go talk to Junkie real quick? And if they do, awesome. If they don't, no big deal either, but at least it'll give us an opportunity to get some content. Would have loved to have talked to Lorenzo Fertitta, who slipped in the other night, but of course, he wasn't doing interviews. So, Tuesday night series, the Contender Series, enough of my commercial for them. Watch it. It's good. Even watch the Snoop cast. I think the Snoop cast is hilarious. I can see how some people would hate it. I can see how some people would not be able to watch it if you were a quote-unquote purist. But man, I think it's actually pretty funny, to be honest with you. So I've enjoyed the Snoop cast, and it's kind of funny because Uriah kind of educates him a little bit, teaches him a little bit. So it's alternative. It's not the way I'd want to watch every fight, but I can watch a couple fights like that. So those are how my Tuesday nights are going right now. And then this Tuesday night, I went home for a few hours afterwards, packed my bags, and flew out here to Mexico City. I tell you what, I turned 40 in March. And I am feeling every bit of it now. You know, I took the red eye, trying to save a little money, take the Wednesday morning flight out, bright and early, 1:20 a.m. leaving Las Vegas to Dallas. Fortunately, the kind folks at American Airlines did upgrade me to first class, so got a little bit of sleep there, about 2 hours of sleep on the way to Dallas. Then had a little bit of a layover, about 2.5 hours of layover on the ground in Dallas, and went to the Admirals Club in there and. They don't have sleeping places. And I guess that's probably for a reason. Like, they don't want people just lounging around being lazy or whatever. They got seats. They got places for you to work. They got places for you to eat. They don't have places for you to sleep. And so I'm not a proud man. I just found myself a spot on the floor and pulled some chairs around me to build a little fort around me. And I just went to sleep on the floor. But as soon as I got up, God, I could feel it, man. Just achy. 40 years old sleeping on the floor, man. Not even drunk sleeping on the floor. It's one thing if you pass out. It's another thing to just sleep there. So I did that. And then it just made me realize how old I am. I didn't have a problem doing that. Even, I don't know. I feel like even like 5 years ago, I'd sleep on floors in airports to save a little money for the company, you know. I'd sleep on the floor of a hotel conference room or something like that. For instance, Saturday night, the fights get over at 1:00. My flight leaves, press conference and everything will be over by 1:00. My flight leaves at 6:00, so I'm not going to have very many hours between the end of the fights and the time I need to get to the airport. So I'm actually just checking out of my hotel room before I go to the fights. I'm bringing my luggage to the fights, and then, you know, I'll just sleep on the plane home. So, you know, save the company a couple bucks. Maybe if I have an hour or two, I'll grab a quick, you know, nap somewhere, but probably won't sleep at all. You know, usually I could do that and not feel bad, but I'm just getting old. My kid is starting kindergarten next week, and I'm sleeping my ass on floors of airports, feeling achy as shit when I get up. Oh man, life comes at you fast when you get old, huh? All right, well listen, since I don't have my man Cole Coffee, and you don't want to sit here listening to me ramble, I know that. I know enough that you don't want to hear me talking for an hour. So you know what I did? I got my man Rodrigo Del Campo, who is an absolute encyclopedia of Latin American mixed martial arts knowledge, and just love coming in, down here and talking to him and picking his brain on what's going on, because he's got his finger on the pulse, and he delivered once again. So we have an extended conversation where we talk about just the status of the UFC in Mexico. It's a time of transition. It's a little bit of a scary time. This is an important market. UFC has always loved Mexico, but it's a little different right now. So he talks about that. We talk about this card, kind of preview a little bit of it. You know the fights that you're looking forward to, but we talk about some of the other ones as well. So sit back and listen to me and my man Rodrigo Del Campo. We sat at the host hotel out on the patio. The W is freaking gorgeous. It is a beautiful hotel. I'm staying just around the corner at the Hyatt Regency. Not a bad hotel, but it's not. It's not the W. That's where we're at. The JW Marriott. Excuse me to the fine folks of the JW Marriott. The W was a fine hotel as well. We did the media day there today. But the JW Marriott is pimp. So we kind of set out by the pool. Perfect weather. I'm talking about like 78 degrees, partly cloudy, slight breeze. And we broke it down. Talked about UFC Fight Night 114 and everything that's going on in Mexico. Well, listen, no trip to Mexico would be complete without a chance to sit down and talk to this gentleman right here, Rodrigo Del Campo, the editor-in-chief of Indiscutido.com, the leading Spanish language site out there. I mean, if you're speaking Spanish and you want to cover MMA and read about MMA, there's really no place else to go. Am I right?
At least we're not copying the other sites and just translating it.
That's
and stealing
worst,
pictures
right?
And doing everything.
I bet they get away with that, too, because nobody knows what they're doing,
they do.
Right?
They do. I don't know where I pointed out.
You
put it out. Hey, I read this here. Oh, no. They got it from here. This is the original.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, shit, yeah.
It is, man. It's the worst, right? Because you know how hard you work. You know how hard you put in to get original content, and then somebody steals it. I know that the average fan probably doesn't care, but it's so frustrating just because we put so much time and effort and money into it, and then for somebody to just steal it and take it and to think that that's okay, so frustrating.
Dude, I'm independent, so it's like even worse for me, so.
That's
right. It sucks.
It's really coming out of your pocket, not just your boss's pocket.
No, it's my pocket, literally.
Mm. Well, thanks for sitting down, man. I always appreciate you taking the time. I know fight weeks are busy, especially when the UFC is right here in your backyard. Literally, your backyard. We're sitting outside of the JW Marriott, which is a beautiful hotel. The press room is set up just off of the pool area, which is phenomenal. So we're getting some work done. Then you just kind of walk out, sit in the patio. The weather is absolutely gorgeous here in Mexico City. And you pointed out, your place is just right
over
there.
Yeah, it's like a mile and a half from here. And you're lucky because we had rain for like 3 weeks straight.
That's what I heard, that it usually rains here a lot during the summer.
No, we had 3 weeks straight of rain. Hasn't rained since Saturday, I think, or Friday.
This is
so phenomenal. You're in luck. You're
can't
in luck.
Beat it because, man, back home in Vegas right now, you know, it's 110 degrees.
No. I've been there. It sucks.
Oh, this is such nice. We're sitting outside, shorts
good.
And a polo shirt on, feeling good.
This is good.
It's not bad. All right. Well, that's the good.
That's a good.
Let's talk about the maybe not so good, right? Let's just get into it. UFC Fight Night 114. You know me, man. I'm a fight fan, and I'm an athlete fan. You know, I love finding prospects, and I love hearing about people up and coming. So it's not like I'm one of those guys that only wants to see stars fight. But overall, just the card, not great, right?
Like, I get it. I get it. It's a weird time for the UFC in Mexico. It's a weird time for the UFC in Latin America after the disappearance of the UFC network. I know we're going to get into it.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think the card reflects it. I think the ticket sales reflect that also. No, it's not the strongest card. This is not much different from the other cards. The thing is that those cards had, like, a known headliner on top.
You had a Cain Velasquez.
But if you look at UFC 180, mm-hmm. It's not that different than from this card. You just had... But in that case, Mark Hunt and Fabricio Verdum. But you had like everyone from top Latin America making their debuts. Mm-hmm. Like Yair was making his debut. The first fight was Marco Beltran against Chito Vera. That was the first fight.
That's true.
You had Hector Urbin, I think, in the main card.
Yeah.
You had Dodger Montaño in the main card. Edgar Garcia, I think, was in the main card.
You're right.
So like when you see the five cards, it's pretty much the same cards. The thing is, they were banking on the success of Brandon. But you cannot bank on the success of Brandon Moreno when your channel has under 100,000 subscribers and think you're going to sell 20,000 tickets.
So you touched on it.
That's it. That's it. That's a problem.
Right off the bat, the disappearance of the UFC network, which is now called the Combat...
Fighting Sports Network.
Fighting Sports Network.
Which is the worst name in the history of names.
That's pretty terrible.
I'm going to get into how the name came to.
Well, how did this come about? Because basically, my understanding is this. The UFC, for whatever reason... they've already announced the fact that they're signing with Fox Sports Latin America. Well, I guess in South America and Central America, they're already there.
Yeah, from UFC 211 on.
But Mexico runs through next year.
Yeah.
But they already announced the Mexico side of it. So you've got a TV partner here that knows you're already leaving, and that used to be the person that was your partner in charge of your premium network, the UFC network. It's a weird situation.
Well, when everything happened in March, April, I really went back to see my interviews. Scrums with Dana, interviews with Lawrence Epstein. I was there when they announced the launch of the UFC network. It was May 2013. The network started, I think it was UFC 164, the first card, which, if I am remembering correctly, was Milwaukee, mm-hmm. Benson against Anthony Pettis. That was the first card.
Get your memory,
that's the
man.
First
that's
card.
Good.
That was the first card.
Yep.
But at that interview, Lawrence Epstein told me, the contract says they have to produce 400 hours yearly of original content.
Okay.
And I remember at UFC 166 in Houston, that last JDS Kane Kane fight, in one of the scrums, I asked Dana, how is it going with Televisa? Televisa is not an easy partner. It was Dana. No, you're saying that. I'm not saying that. No, yes, I'm saying it. Televisa is not an easy partner. And it was awful. I mean, it really was. They never produced original content. I mean, first to understand, the UFC wasn't really involved in the channel. It was a licensing deal.
Okay.
So everything was done by and for Televisa. The UFC, like, the UFC does a Spanish play-by-play for the shows. They give the audio and the signal to Televisa, but Televisa was in charge of absolutely everything. There was no meddling by the UFC of anything.
Wow.
So that's number one. Number two, they never did original content. We had, and I was involved in them, two shows. One was an interview show called Uno a Uno. We did 12 episodes. The other was an analysis show with Carlos, you know, Carlos Contreras Legazpi and Christian Tetzpa. We did 8 shows. Those 19, 20 shows, that was the only original productions by the UFC Network in 3.5 years.
So do you feel like Televisa never really was fully committed?
They didn't care. Televisa has the fame of buying rights just to hide them from other networks. Like, they bought the NBA and they're not really doing anything with the NBA. Like, they don't show the NBA during the year, and then they show the All-Star game, and then they show the finals.
That's
but
crazy.
During the year, they don't show it.
They just want to make sure
the
competition
thing is,
can't
you don't have it.
And
in that case, it was Fox was the who had the UFC before. Fox doesn't have it. Now I have it. I can do whatever I want. And when you hear Joe Carr, I saw the interview you did with Joe Carr saying, hey, premium content, paid content isn't really working in Latin America. That's the first thing I think I told you.
It was like, funny. It was
those
like
paid channels.
You
I think
said
you,
it over and all from day one.
You had me over your shoulder when Joe was speaking.
Like, Rodrigo told me that a long time ago, bro. Just listen to him.
It didn't work.
Yep.
It doesn't work. But the idea wasn't bad because the idea was, okay, we're going to have it was cheap. It was $10, and you have every single fight from the UFC live, including pay-per-views. No, that's the cheapest in the world. I don't know what Combate runs in Brazil, but it's probably the same.
I think theirs ends up being like 30 US or something
so
like that.
So it's cheaper.
Yeah.
It's $10 US, and you have every single fight. It still is, because Fighting Sports Network is still showing the UFC
right
through 2017 and through 2018. So the idea was good. And then they had, okay, we're going to have the Ultimate Fighter in Televisa, Canal 5, which is free-to-air TV, and then people are going to go to the network. And then we're going to have some fights on Televisa Deportes Network, which is basic cable, and then people will buy the UFC Network.
Right.
Though they really didn't follow through. You know, I don't know if you remember, at UFC 180, when those guys from the Ultimate Fighter Latin America one were making their debuts, they were stars. I mean, Yair, when Yair walked out to his first fight, there was 20,000 people on their feet clapping.
Yep.
And they knew him from 12 episodes of the Ultimate Fighter, which shows you what free-to-air TV actually did. But when Televisa didn't really care, but by the time the second season aired, they had it 12 episodes, I think, in 8 different time slots. The third season aired on the UFC Network first because Televisa really didn't care. So when everything came through with the buy from the with the selling of the UFC, when WME IMG, for those who don't know, IMG is one of the biggest rights selling companies for sports and everything in the entire world. IMG came in December and started looking at every single contract for the UFC. They came to Televisa on that December. They said, "Hey, you're in breach of contract. You're not producing content." And they were thinking of shutting it down December 31st.
Oh, wow.
Without telling anyone. They bought themselves 3 more months, but they really didn't get to an agreement. During those 3 months, IMG negotiated with Fox Sports. So in March, hey, you're losing Central America, you're losing South America, you're losing the Caribbean, and you're losing the license. So you have to change your name, and you can only show the content in Mexico. And that's that.
Why did they get to keep Mexico, do you know?
Because it's either that or a lawsuit.
Ah.
So it's like a compromise. Okay, you keep Mexico, and I'll sell everything else to Fox Sports.
Interesting.
And we're going to cut the deal in half. Because it was a 10-year deal.
Oh, wow.
What they signed in 2013.
That's
10 years deals, and now it's ending December 31st, 2018.
What a huge shift.
Oh, and the other thing is, with the use of the UFC name, what they did have was rights to the library from UFC Fight Pass.
Right.
So we and I called Invicta, Titan FC, and then they also showed Glory and the EBI. But it was like a first window deal. So if the UFC Network wanted Invicta, UFC would ask to Invicta, hey, have you sold your rights in Latin America? No. Okay, we're going to use them here free of charge. like the UFC Network, Televisa really didn't pay for the content. They paid us as play-by-play analysts.
Right.
But that's the only expense. So it was cheap to use,
cheap
to do Titan. To do, they also did Shooto Brazil. So it was cheap. Now with the new deal, they lost everything.
So what are they showing on it now?
UFC.
That's it.
And reruns. And that's it.
So do you think once does this channel go away basically once the deal's over?
I think it is.
Yeah.
They had like the intent, we're going to do boxing, and it's been 5 months. They haven't really done anything. The name they agreed on 2 weeks before they had to go in the air, and I know for a fact that the logo, they finished it 3 days before they had to go in the air.
So a slight rush job.
No, it's awful. It's awful.
Well, that's a shame because, the UFC, you said it. From all the times you've been on, or you said it from day one, this is not a good model for Mexico, and I think it wasn't a good model for really anywhere. I mean, the premium channels, it doesn't get your content out there. As you said, free to air, yeah, maybe you're not making any revenue, but you're making stars and you're getting people interested in the product.
If Televisa wanted to get the UFC Network onto a base, Televisa owns many, many, many cable and satellite systems in the world. They're as big as Globo, they're as big as everything. In Mexico, they own the two biggest ones. One is called Easy, and one is called Sky. You know, Sky, like in Europe, it's the license of the name. If they had said, okay, we're going to do the UFC Network on the basic systems of those two, and then we're going to sell the ad revenue, they would have made a lot more money. And everybody would see the fights. They really didn't do it. And the thing is now, the deal in Latin America, from Central America down, it's kind of weird, and it's kind of confusing for everyone, because you have, first of all, the first prelims, the Fight Pass prelims, which were shown and are shown in UFC Network and Fighting Sports Network, they're not shown for Central America and South America. So if you want to see them, you have to have Fight Pass. So that's $10 out of your pocket right now to watch 2-3 fights. So they show the second prelims, and if it's a fight night or a UFC on Fox, they show the main event. If it's a pay-per-view, if it's a numbered event, you have to buy a premium channel from package from Fox that's called Fox Premium. You have a channel called Fox Action Premium, and there you can see the main event of the pay-per-view event. So it's weird. It's confusing.
I mean, I get it. They got to make back their revenue, right?
It's
weird.
And people are like, it happened. Because the first event that went to Fox Action Premium was 2:14. So, it was Sunday, 8 o'clock in Mexico. 9 o'clock is the start time for the pay-per-views here. It was, hey, where do I watch it? Where do I watch it? Like, the most visited page during last week for 2:14 for Indiscutido was the guide to watch the event. In what channel do I watch it in the country I'm in?
That's crazy. You know, it's funny because, right now, of course, the United States revenue, the broadcasting deal is going to be up at the end of this year for negotiation. It closes next year. And a lot of people are saying, I tend to think they're probably leaning towards Fox to some degree. I mean, you look everywhere else in the world, they're signing Fox. Now, that doesn't mean they have to be on Fox there too, but it would seem to make sense. But a lot of people are saying, there's a possibility that they'll split it up. Fox will get some. Maybe TBS will get some. Maybe ESPN will get some. I think that's – I don't know that the sport is big enough to do that, man.
It's not the NBA.
It's not. I get it. There's certain big sports where you can split them up and put them in different places. I feel like MMA needs a home. Spike was the home forever. It was one place. Man, I wonder if the fights are on. Let me flip it on that channel and see if I can see something. I know they got $4 billion they need to make back, so they're going to do whatever they need to do to make their money. But that seems like a risky potential to split things up on different networks.
No, I agree. It's not the NFL to know, okay, the early game is on CBS, the late game is on Fox. I'm going to go to NBC. Then it's Monday, I'm going to go to ESPN.
Right.
Doesn't happen. You have to be as big as the NFL to do that. Like even fringe sports, not fringe, but smaller sports, like NASCAR, when they divide their seasons into channels, people get weirded out. Is it Fox? Is it NBC? Where am I going? Yep. And it happens here because I get a lot of people from Mexico asking me, why it isn't in Fox? Well, in Mexico, you have to buy a channel. That's it. And now the weird part. Fox still has the rights for Bellator. So in Central and South America, they show Bellator and the UFC. In Mexico, they only show Bellator. For example, yesterday, you have to give them interviews. The rights holder.
Right.
They can't use them in Mexico, but the crew from Mexico have been here doing interviews for everyone else to use them, from Argentina to Central America.
I saw Fox people running around.
Yeah, they're recording for Central America down. But those two guys that were recording here are the play-by-play and the analyst for Bellator. Which is
interesting.
And those guys, I don't want to say because I do their job, I know how difficult it is to be a play-by-play man. I'm lucky that I have great coaches to do that at Claro Sports, at Marca Claro. I've been lucky enough to do play-by-play at the Olympic Games last year.
Wow.
But those guys, I mean, they've been calling Bellator for 3 years. I'm serious. The guy who does the play-by-play for Bellator and Fox doesn't know that at 29-28 on all three cards is a unanimous decision.
Oh, he I know when people call that a split decision.
Yes.
Oh, I hate that. That's a pet peeve.
He's been calling it for 3 years. He's been calling play-by-play for 3 years, and we hear 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. Oh, that's a split decision. Kidding me? And that's the guy that's probably going to call the UFC in 2019.
Well, maybe things will change before then. We'll see. I can't imagine they'd want people calling. I can't imagine the UFC would want the same crew calling.
The thing is, Bellator. The thing with Bellator is it was weird because that deal was Bjorn's.
Right.
Like Bjorn signed that deal.
Yeah.
And Bjorn wanted before the first year finished to have a main event in Mexico with Tito Ortiz.
Right.
That was Bjorn's dream, which would have done good.
Yep.
I know Tito against anyone would have sold 15,000 tickets. But Bjorn was out like 6 months after. And, I mean, Spike's strategy is different. Scott Coker's strategy is different. Says, hey, we have the deal. We're going to show the fights. That's it. We're not going to Mexico. We go to Europe with some partners. We'll stay in the States. We don't really care about Latin American talent. That's the UFC's thing. That's it. You know?
That's crazy. You mentioned Latin American talent. The Ultimate Fighter Latin America has done a good job of developing talent. I mean, I think it's a show that people didn't really pay attention to in the United States just because, you know, who are these people? I don't know them. But there's some guys that have come off that show that are doing pretty well right now. What's the future of that show right now? Do you know? Do you think that this whole Fox thing is going to keep the show in limbo maybe?
Now that it's been a year, I can give you like the quote-unquote behind-the-scenes thing. After the last season, after the third season last year, they were done. They were absolutely done. Televisa didn't really want to pay it. It was a split-by-split cost. That was the only season that was done in Latin America. It was done in Argentina. It wasn't an easy season to do. It was hard work. It was less expensive than the Vegas seasons, but also you didn't have the Las Vegas crew,
right,
which is like those guys have it down to a science.
Yep.
Whether you like the show or not, those guys have it down to a science.
Yep.
From the first time they hit rec to the till they deliver the last episode. Those guys are pros. They did it in Argentina. It wasn't the best experience. They were going to stop doing it. Televisa said, hey, I'm not going to pay the part that I have to pay for the Ultimate Fighter. We're not doing it. When Jeremy Pollock was still around, Claro Sports stepped up and said, hey, I want UFC content. I want to be with the Ultimate Fighter. When Jeremy Pollock got fired, that was done.
Wow.
So the thing is done. What you have to pay attention to is the development programs. Because those development programs that started in Jackson's MMA in 2013, those were the ones that gave the talent to the Ultimate Fighter. Like guys like Teco Quiñones, Alejandro Perez, Jair Rodriguez, even Brandon. Brandon was part of the first development program. But he couldn't go to the Ultimate Fighter first season because he was under 21. It was the Paige VanZant thing. We're doing it in Vegas. We have Bud Light here.
Yeah.
You can't be here. So he went away, started training in Arizona, fighting at WFF, and now made his way the other way around through the Ultimate Fighter in the US, in the US, right?
Yep.
But those development programs really have talent. Even Martin Bravo, who won the last season, is fighting this weekend, came from a development program. Those, as far as I know, are done. The last one stopped. It was with women at King's MMA. It was the fourth version of that. The first one was at Jackson's. Second at American Top Team. Third and fourth at King's MMA.
And I guess maybe for people that don't know, these are fighters that the UFC identifies and basically helps to cover their costs and for them to train.
It was with two purposes. They say, okay, we have 12 fighters from Latin America that we like. First purpose is we're going to fly them to Jackson's MMA. They're going to live there. We're going to pay for 6 months of their training. We'll see if we can get someone for the roster. If we can't, then they're going to go back to their countries, back to their home gyms, and say, hey, this is the way things are done at Jackson's MMA. This is the way things are done at American Top Team. This is the way things are done at King's MMA. It has worked. It has worked. You have, I mean, Jair Rodriguez came from that, 6-1 in the UFC.
Yep.
Brandon Moreno came from that, 3-0 in the UFC, headlining his first event. So it paid off. But that was really Jamie Pollock's and Sean Shelby's pet project. I don't know if Sean is going to want to revive it, if he's going to want to keep it going for a fifth time. But it was really Jamie Pollock's pet project.
That's interesting. I never knew Jamie had that much influence in it.
Oh, no. Jamie was the man in Latin America. He was really interested in the market. Couldn't really get it turned around. For people that don't know, he's the one who got Brazil going again after they came back. So he was really a key. And Latin America really lost a defender I mean, Joe Carr has really taken an interest in Latin America. That's been huge, even with everything that Joe has to do. Because what people maybe don't realize is that when they fire all those local heads, like from Canada, from Latin America, from Europe, you have James Elliott and Joe Carr for the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough job for Joe. Hey, go to Australia.
And then James Elliott
Latin
was
America.
Like, I'm out.
And then it's like, you know?
It's a lot.
So it's a lot for him.
It's a lot to understand the markets, you know, to know what works, what doesn't. I mean, you got to rely a lot on your local advisors, but you're right, man. It's tough to be in charge of everything. All right, so because of everything that's happened behind the scenes, basically what we have is this week a card that, from what you and I have both heard, the tickets are not selling especially well for. Maybe they'll give away enough tickets that it'll still look okay on TV. I mean, I'm sure when the UFC saw this card coming together, they didn't think, oh, we'll sell the place out. I mean, I'm sure they had to temper their expectations a little bit. But a card that's probably not going to sell out, probably not going to do extremely well at the gate. Do you think that impacts the future of Mexican UFC? Because I'm a little concerned that maybe it's not going in the right direction. And when you have a TV partner that's not really a TV partner, I'm thinking maybe like next year they kind of sit out and go explore some other places in Latin America.
First of all, regarding the card, I think they know. But also you have to see what they have done this year. Like, you have fight nights with 7,000 people.
Right.
And with 700,000 at the gate. So if Mexico with this card does 6,000 tickets, what you can't say anything.
Right, can't complain.
You know, I don't know what the attendance was at, like at Oklahoma City. But when you're under 10,000, and in Mexico with this card, you 5,000-6,000, you're good.
Right.
Number one. Number two, during this week, probably today, tomorrow, Joe Carr talked to Carlos Contreras Legazpi of Milenio. We've heard, Joe told you that he wanted to go to South America this year. It's not going to be this year. It's going to be next year. And they're going back to Mexico probably until 2019. They're going to wait out the TV deal.
That's what I thought.
They want to come back with a pay-per-view.
Okay. Kind of come back with a big splash.
We have Fox. We go, okay, we're going to do Kane, Kelvin, Jair, maybe see where Brandon is, Latin American talent that can actually be on a pay-per-view event anywhere in the world.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought might be happening.
Because
I guess
if they really wanted to sell this place, I mean, I know they had to do the fight at UFC 211. You wanted to sell out this place, you should have done Jair and Frankie here.
I know, right? It seemed like it was almost it didn't need to be at 211.
Honestly, if you had done Jair and Frankie here, Not who gives a shit, but the other 11 fights didn't really matter.
That's right.
Jair Frankie would have sold that 20,000 tickets in a week.
It'd be a hell of a fight night. As a hell of a fight night main event. It's kind of weird in retrospect.
You maybe could do it as a Fox event because it's Frankie. It was sold out.
Weird decision making. All right, so then we'll probably next year, we won't see Mexico then, I'm guessing. So we'll probably see, I guess, Argentina and
there's two countries that you can go in Latin America, and it's Argentina and Chile.
Right.
That's it. And it's not against the people or the fans of the other countries. It's just the specs of the arena that the UFC needs to do their show.
Right.
That's it. There's a huge arena in Chile, Arena Movistar, which is nice, which is good for the event. I know there's some places they're looking at in Argentina, not necessarily in Buenos Aires. There's an arena, new arena, I think it's the New Orfeo, Nuevo Orfeo, in Cordoba. That's a good arena. That's a 20,000 place that can host an NBA game, which is like the standard the UFC needs.
Yep.
It's an NBA arena.
Right.
That's the only place. You're probably going to see Chile and Argentina next year. And you have Santiago Ponzinibbio doing well. You have Diego Rivas, which whatever happens here, it doesn't matter. You can put him everywhere.
Yep.
You know, they're going to do good. They're going to do good in Chile. It's not that difficult to travel to country in South America. So they're going to do good. Hopefully they can do it. It's the TBD date that was announced last week.
Right, the December.
That was the date they wanted to go to South America on this year, December 9th. And the Arena Movistar was booked.
So that's
that was
what
like one of the great impediments. So you're going to push it another year. Let the Fox deal take its hold, that people actually watch the event. What people don't know is Fox Sports 2 in Latin America, different from the U.S., it's basically on every basic cable channel system.
Oh, okay.
Like on your cheapest cable system, you probably have Fox Sports and Fox Sports 2, which is different from
the
U.S.
Yeah, you got to have the high tier.
Yeah, to even have Fox Sports 1, yep. Let alone Fox Sports 2.
Interesting. All right, well, so I guess if you're in Mexico and you want to see the UFC, you better get a ticket this week because
you're
it might be a while.
Yeah, it's going to be a while. It's probably going to be a while.
And you could probably get a ticket pretty cheap.
2 for 1? I mean, they had on Wednesday, they had 2 for 1 offer. Yeah.
Wow.
Super Bowl, Super Miércoles, Super Bowl, it's 2 for 1.
Wow.
Which, if you remember, that's what they did at Monterrey.
That's
at
Monterrey. Right. Yeah, Monterrey. Monterrey was such a surprise to everybody. They didn't sell well. I know they wanted even people that I knew from Mexico thought Monterrey would do good.
Which the thing with Monterrey is that was the perfect place to do pay-per-view events because the altitude is the same as Las Vegas.
Right.
You have to have guys spending $3,000, $5,000 to do an altitude camp in Mexico City.
Yep. That's a
so
lot
you
of
could
doing.
Say anyone, hey, you're friend in Monterrey. There's no impediment. It's the same altitude as Vegas is 500 feet. So when Monterrey tanked, that was a big blow. That was a big blow.
All right, let's talk about this card. Sergio Pettis versus Brandon Moreno in the main event. Not getting a lot of attention, you know, back in the States. Of course, there's, you know, I think everybody's already talking about Mayweather-McGregor and excited for that. But I think this is a meaningful fight, especially because, number one, I think these two guys are top prospects. I mean, 23 years old, both these guys. That's crazy. I mean, how young they are and good they are. But you and I were talking right before we sat down to start recording. I mean, there's some real title implications here, right? I mean, flyweight's such a weird division where Demetrius Johnson has just beaten everybody that – it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that one of these guys might be after Ray Borg?
Yeah, it would be depending what they want to do with Dillashaw, with Cody, and what DJ wants to do, if he, when he, or whatever, does a UFC with Ray Borg, you know? I mean, you're facing Ray Borg. You've beaten Joseph Benavidez twice. You've beaten Henry Cejudo, who's also fighting in September. You've beaten Wilson Hayes, who's fighting Henry in September. So it's not like in December, maybe they could fight DJ, you know? If Brandon wins this, it's going to be 4 in a row, 3 against top 10 opponents. If Sergio wins it, it's also like a big straight. They've improved a lot. Brandon, I know Brandon. The thing with Brandon is he's not showing it this fight, but we'll see what happens. It's been a long 18 months for Brandon. I mean, people remember him from The Ultimate Fighter. He fought in April of last year, defended his belt at WFF, then went to The Ultimate Fighter, then took the Lewis Smolka fight. It's been 4 fights in the UFC, plus the Ultimate Fighter, the Pantoja fight, plus a fight in April. It's 6 fights in 18 months for Brandon now.
That's a lot.
So that's I mean, he's good. He knows it. Like, I'm good now. He's healthy. He's going to make weight. We were talking Friday afternoon. He's going to make weight easy. He's good today. But he knows. He knows he's going to fight this, and he's got to rest 3 or 4 months at least. And I think Sean and Mick know it too.
I was a little surprised. I just pulled up the odds. I'm not a big, you know, gambler by any stretch of the imagination, but obviously I knew Brandon Moreno would be, you know, the hometown favorite and people would love him, but I'm surprised he's actually the betting favorite as well. Do you feel that's accurate? Do you think he's a better fighter than Sergio Pettis?
Well, what are the odds? Because if it's plus 100 and minus 100.
No, it's actually minus – it's minus 170 and plus 150, so it's not crazy.
But it's like a
but
little –
but it's a little bit. It's not like pick 'em, you know?
I see it a lot even. I mean
– I do too.
The thing with Sergio, I mean, they know. Sergio's been training with Israel Martinez, with Izzy Martinez for a while. Is really have improved his wrestling a lot. They saw the Dustin Ortiz fight. They know wrestling is like the kryptonite for Brandon Moreno. But there's one thing. Talking to Brandon, talking to Fernando Gonzalez, his Brazilian jiu-jitsu coaches, Brandon has really improved his Brazilian competition jiu-jitsu. Not only his jiu-jitsu for MMA. And the thing that said, okay, it maybe doesn't really go hand-in-hand with MMA, but what it has done to Brandon is he's calm. When he's on bottom. If you see the Dustin Ortiz fight, he knows. He knows he's getting his ass kicked on the first round. And when he goes to the bench, they know. Everyone knows. Like, there's no illusion. He sits down, and the first thing his coach says, okay, that sucked, plan B. We're changing everything and starting talking. They know. But if you see the fight again, Brandon is cool. He's calm. Like, he knows. There's no urgency to get back up. There's no urgency to do anything stupid. So, yes, Serge is going to have the advantages of wrestling. Brandon is going to have the advantage of being calm, of being offensive with his back on the mat. And I think striking-wise, people really underrate Brandon. He has a lot of power. He has nice reach. Sergio, obviously, is a machine training with Duke Rufus. So I really think it's an even fight. I'm surprised that people – because that tells me – I mean, we're 3 days, 2 days away from the fight – that a lot of money – has come to Brandon.
Yep, I was surprised as well. I thought it was going to be more even. So it's a good fight. I like the fight. I think it's a very interesting fight. I love flyweights. I know it's not marketable. I mean, you know, Demetrius Johnson can't draw. This isn't probably going to draw, you know, two flyweights that a lot of people know. But as far as if you're a fight fan, I think it's going to be a great fight.
It's a good fight. And the thing with Brandon and what sucks is that we didn't have open workouts, that we don't have a ceremonial weigh-in. Brandon hasn't fought in Mexico since 2012 because there aren't really flyweights in Mexico.
Right.
So to build his career, he had to go to Arizona. He had to go to California. He hasn't fought in Mexico in 5 years and not have a ceremonial weigh-in. Not having an open workout, he's cool, but because he said, okay, that's more time for myself.
Right.
I'm going to make weight at 9 a.m.
But it doesn't help you get your name out there, your face out there.
That's the thing. And when you have a channel in Mexico that has less than 100,000 subscribers, who's going to know you? Because the thing is, Jair came up when Televisa was still pushing free-to-air TV. Like UFC 180 was on free-to-air TV. Tape delayed, but it was on free-to-air TV.
So anybody in the country can watch it.
So Jair won, and then they watched 188, and then... That's what got the ball rolling with Jair and the popularity he still has in Mexico, no? So it's a shame for Brandon. It really is a shame for Brandon.
It is. He's such a likable guy, too. The dude's just always smiling,
kid.
Man.
I've known Brandon for 4 years now. The first interview I ever did with him was almost 4 years ago. We started telling people, hey, I mean, we have our podcast, La Decisión Dividida, which is like, I think, 162 episodes. Interview with Brandon was episode 31.
Wow.
And hey, look at this guy. He's fighting the U.S. He's getting good results. He's a flyweight. What we told everyone then is he's a flyweight. You went to a flyweight division. You win four, you're for the belt.
It's true.
It's such a short division.
And here it is. This would be number four.
This guy could be the first Mexican-born and raised to fight for a UFC belt because we knew the division was really short. And when you go in and you submit Luis Mocha when he's number eight, say, hey,
Good start.
Three wins, and you get the belt.
Yep. He could be
here. We'll see.
Co-main event, Alexa Grasso versus Randa Markos. I'm excited because I talked to Alexa a little bit today, and I am so happy to hear that she sees what I see, which is she came to the UFC, and she started fighting cautious and being, like, just overthinking things, you know? And I think maybe it was the pressure of the undefeated record or the hype. I don't know what it was, but at least to me, A, her English is getting phenomenal.
Yep.
It's
absolutely
amazing.
Absolutely.
And B, she said straight up, you know what, the last fight, you know, I feel like I finally started getting going in the end of the third round, and you know, but it was kind of freeing to me. And she's like, I get it now. She's like, I used to be in brawls, and if I got my face marked up, like, so what? I'm fighting. Because I thought she was so fun to watch in Invicta, and I'm telling everybody, you got to watch this girl. She's awesome. And not that she's done bad, but I just haven't I haven't felt that same wow in her UFC performances.
Well, I remember I call some of Alexa's fights for the UFC Network in Invicta. And I remember the last fight, the Jody Esquivel fight. I called that fight. And I remember, like, I really got criticized everywhere because during that fight I said, hey, she is kicking her ass, but she's not pressuring enough. She doesn't have enough volume.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to do it at the next level, you know? The Heather Joe Clark was a really cautious fight because they didn't know what they were dealing with the altitude.
Right.
I talked to her uncle, who is her head coach, Francisco Grasso, right when she was doing the scrum, and he told me there was a gear lift. We didn't really want to go there because we knew we were up 2018 and she wasn't really doing anything. But that night I told him, like, I know, but you have to make, dude.
You try to get people to pay money to watch you fight. You need to go for it.
And I talked to Alex today. I think the thing with the Felice Herrick fight, I think she was really stressed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she really felt the burden of that card on a very Latin city like Houston. I think she really felt the weight on her shoulders that she really had to do all, to do every press, to do every interview. And now she knows, okay, that's a part of the job. It's not that she doesn't like it, but it was just stressing her out.
Right. She's not used to it.
Like, she needed to relax, see what happens. I think there's a lot of confidence in the UFC, even if you think whatever you think of this card, to have her again as a co-main event. That's three fights in the UFC, three fights in the main event for Alexa Grasso. So they expect it. They expect it to be a good fight. And I was also happy when they announced it, that seeing many smart Mexican fans that when they saw the fight, they were saying, hey, do not get fooled by Randa Markos' record.
Right.
She's an amazing fighter.
She's fought tough people,
dude,
man.
Dude, look what she did at Tough.
Yep.
Like, when she came to Tough, no one knew whatever. And then goes out, first fight, eliminates Tisha Torres.
Crazy.
Like, what? Wait.
Yep.
So they know. They know. And the team knows that this is probably her toughest fight. I mean, they never underestimated anyone. I really do believe that even with the Felice Herrick fight, her toughest opponent was Mizuki Inoue.
Yeah.
Especially at that time.
Yep.
It was 2014. Especially at that time. But I think they know this is a tougher fight. This is the toughest fight. And they have to win, and they have to win big.
It doesn't have much of a Latin American flavor to it, but a fight that I'm looking forward to, Alan Jouban versus Nico Price.
Shit, right?
This one looks like it's got Fight of the Night written all over it, right?
No, Nico's going crazy.
Right?
Like, if he thinks he's not going to touch me, he's mistaken. If he thinks I'm not going to make this awful, he's mistaken. And when I talked to Alan, I said, hey, how do you see technically Nico? Okay, he's not the worst technician in the world. He's not very technical, but he does one thing right. He drags you into his style of fighting. He drags you into his fight.
Yep.
And that's what I can do, especially after losing, especially after getting injured, especially at altitude. So they both know. Nico is coming in, he wants to knock out Alan. He knows what's at stake here. He knows, like, staying unbeaten, beating Alan Jouban is going to just give him access to top 10 opponents. And, you know, how open is the welterweight division right now when you don't know who's going to face Tyron Woodley,
right,
who's going to face the guys up top? You know,
there's not a natural
Nico
name
with
there right
with
now.
A good win against Alan Jouban, he's right there. I mean, maybe not to fight Tyron Woodley, but, like, okay, two more wins.
Fights.
Couple more wins. Like a regular opponent, top 5 opponent next, and then maybe a contender, and I'm there.
I like it. Nico's, he's been here for 3 weeks,
yeah,
so he came here to really study. Now,
and Jouban, he was sleeping with an altitude tent before.
It's amazing, man.
He knows.
Jouban did the altitude tent. I was a little surprised because Jouban was at UFC 214 last week. Of course, he lives in Southern California, but I was kind of surprised to see him there because I thought he'd be here already getting used to it. But he said, listen, you know, I'm doing the altitude tent. He said he was going to Big Bear on the weekends just to kind of – so it's not like he blew it off. So, but I think on paper that looks like a fun fight. The other one that I think looks like fun and kind of a mystery man, but I learned a little bit about him today, and we talked about it a little bit, Humberto Bandanay.
Bandanay.
Much better. That's an awesome pronunciation. I suck. My kid speaks better Spanish than me. And Martin Bravo fighting as well. Bandanay, I know you said – basically – I told his manager, Jason House, that I'd follow up with him one way. I mean, this was short notice and, you know, it was a really busy day. But it sounds like he's got a pretty amazing story in the fact that his dad basically wanted him to go live in the United States to work with Chito Vera, who I guess they were friends from before, and to pursue his passion of making it to the UFC. Knew that in his home he wasn't going to make it to the UFC. He did make it to the USC, but I guess his father recently, from what I understand, passed away. So, you know, not getting to see that dream come to fruition, but just kind of a tug at the heartstrings type story.
Yeah, and you have to take a look at what's happening with Colin Oyama. Chito Vera was the first Latin to go there. I mean, I think he met Carlos Esparza, one of the UFC tour things in Ecuador. They started going to train there, hooked up with Jason House, and started getting Latin American fighters there. Diego Rivas, who's fighting this weekend, is also training with Colin Oyama. Diego, who also has an amazing story, we'll get into it. And Humberto was fighting in Mexico, not in Mexico City, in Tampico, I think, 2 weeks ago. So I think it's two things for Humberto. First of all, I mean, fighting after what happened to his father, it's got to be difficult. I mean, maybe inspires you, but it's still tough. It's obviously real tough. And the second is, he was already in the process of making weight when they signed this fight. He was already water loading. Sean and Mick told them on a Tuesday, and then signed on the Wednesday. He was fighting on Saturday.
So
when Jason House got
down in
touch with Mick and Sean and said, hey, we won the fight after Grootsemacher was out, he was already tapering down from food, already water loading. So it's, okay, stop that. Do not rebound. Watch your weight for a couple of weeks. So it's kind of hard. He's really tall.
Yeah.
He's really, really, really. He's big for the division. He's a big 145er. I don't know if he's going to be the tallest in the UFC right now, now that Dan Hooker has moved up to lightweight.
Yep.
But he's going to be one of the tallest. But do not discount Martin on reach. Martin is really big, really, really long on the arms. He has an amazing reach. And one thing that surprised me when I talked to you before we start recording, I was visiting them, the Entram guys, which is Henry Briones, Martin Bravo, Brandon Moreno, and Jose Alberto Quiñones, Teco Quiñones, the day they signed the Humberto fight. And his coach, first thing he told me, this is a tougher fight than Chris Grootsemacher. I saw a video yesterday. Maybe people do not know Humberto Bandanay. This is a tougher fight. We're not going to say no. We want the fight. I think Martin is going to do awesome. But this is a tougher fight than Chris Grootsemacher. They know.
That's interesting. That's a good one. Sam Alvey, Rashad Evans. Weird fight when they announced it, right? It was just like, what? Huh? What's going on? But, you know, I guess with Rashad Evans, that's where you are right now. And I don't mean to discount Rashad. I feel like this is such an interesting fight. I talked to him today. And, I tried to sit down with him yesterday. And apparently I was originally scheduled to talk to him. And then he asked if he could cancel some of his stuff. I guess he just didn't want to do the full schedule or whatever. So I don't know if that's because he's in a bad mood, doesn't feel like talking to the media anymore, doesn't want to have to talk about his losses, I'm not sure. But ended up talking to him today a little bit. Seems like he's in a good place. He seems like he's upbeat enough. But you do wonder, I'm never one to say retire or whatever, because he looked physically awesome in his middleweight debut. I mean, you just look at him, you're like, wow, man. And, you know, I'm sure he'll look great on the scale tomorrow too. But you do wonder, like, is this the type of fight where we're going to find out, could this be the end of Rashad Evans?
And Mickey Wade, I mean, he's going to make weight. It's not Diego Sanchez in Monterrey, which was just awful to see. Remember at that media day when he was hitting 145? That was tough. Rashad obviously is not as good as making 205. It's hard. He looked kind of weak, kind of tired today. But I think he was in a good place. He did the investment, man. I mean, he's been here for 4 weeks.
Wow,
he knows. No. The thing is, I came and purposely, he didn't really post many social pictures. He wasn't really on Instagram. I think he had one or two pictures, and that's it. So he's making the investments. He came to Mexico. He did the altitude. He's taking this seriously. He knows how difficult Sam can be. He knows how aggressive Sam can be. But I think he knows that if you lose to Sam Alvey, and that's not discounting Sam Alvey because he can win.
Right.
He absolutely can win. But I think Rashad knows if you lose to Sam Alvey, that's it. You're not going to get a title shot, and you have to face the reality that this, I don't know if this is the end of your career, but this is the end of being a title contender forever.
He's so crazy. I mean, you think about this guy was one of the biggest superstars in the sport, and now he's five fights down on a fight night in Mexico. You know, it's like, Jesus.
And hold on, because he's going to get support on Saturday.
Yeah.
The golden age of the UFC in Mexico is those early 2000 fighters. Because that's when the UFC actually was starting, was getting watched in Mexico. And I talked to him about that. Like, the first tough guys. Like, when Forrest was in the arena last year, it was insane.
Right, it was.
And when Rashad walks out on Saturday, it's going to be insane. People love Rashad. They love that time, that era of the UFC. They love Vitor. They love Anderson. They love Chuck. They love Forrest. They love those guys. So he's going to get the support of Mexico, even with Sam Alvey, Canelo Alvarez. Do you remember last year? You know, Canelo, for those who don't know, it means like pelirrojo, like cinnamon, like canela.
Right.
And everyone was screaming when Sam Alvey fought the hero last year, Canelo. So I know that the minute he was going to walk out, it's going to be Canelo again for Sam Alvey.
That's fantastic. All right, the rest of the card. Who should we be looking out for? Give us some names, some fights that you're excited for, some good stories. I mean, give us some people to watch for, because I know the casual fan, you know, I got anybody listen to this, I got to think they're a little bit hardcore. But even among the hardcores, I can see people looking at this and just going, I don't know what I'm watching here.
Well, but Brad Scott Hermanson, that should be a fun fight.
Yep.
That's a slugfest. That's going to be fun. That's going to be good. I'd look out for, first of all, I mean, Hector Sandoval. Hector Sandoval,
like,
with that
kid.
2-win streak, that amazing knockout of Matt Schnell. Matt Schnell's here. He's bumping into Hector Sandoval.
That's all
kind
I'm
of awkward.
Around,
Matt Schnell has been working these weeks with Brandon Moreno. He's fighting Marco Beltran at UFC 216, which is kind of awkward because Marco Beltran visited Brandon's camp for the first 2 weeks. He trained alongside Matt Schnell for 2 weeks, and now they're fighting each other. Look out for Hector. I think Hector has a solid, good game plan. It's gonna. He understands this. Okay. Brandon beat Dustin Ortiz, and now he's maybe 1-2 fights away from the title. If I beat Dustin Ortiz, I say, hey, give me a top 10. Give me a top 5 next. I mean, Hector Sandoval is one to watch. And also, Teco Quiñones against Diego Rivas. First of all, Diego Rivas, an amazing story. He beats Noah Lahad with that amazing flying knee knockout last year at what was supposed to be UFC 196. Remember, February of last year. Goes to the hospital. They do a full body check. They found out he has cancer. Has to go to surgery, has to go to chemotherapy. He has the all clear now. He has cancer is in remission, switches weight classes, travels from Chile to the U.S. to train with Colin Oyama, and just found out that he's going to be a father.
Wow.
So it's like everything from glory to hell to glory. That, like, they really told him that he thought that the cancer had metastasized to other organs when they first detected it. He was in a bad place. He told me he really was in a bad place, that he was, I mean, they really were thinking, maybe you could die. I mean, he was really bad coming back. And the thing with Teco Quiñones, with Alberto Teco Quiñones, is he doesn't fight that often. But every time we see him fight, there's a development there. Mm-hmm. This is from the guys from Entram in Tijuana, which is going to make history. First Mexican gym to have 4 Mexican fighters at the same UFC card. So Martin Bravo, Henry Briones, Teco Quiñones, and Brandon Moreno. First time a Mexican gym has a headliner in the UFC. That's also important for MMA Mexican history. But every time we see him, there's a development. This is one of the guys that actually takes advantage of the deal Entram has with Alliance MMA. goes over to Alliance MMA all the time with some of the other fighters, actually spars there. He's one of the guys that got shouted out by Dominic Cruz when he beat Roger Faber at UFC 199. Sparred a lot with Dom, sparred a lot with Yair Rodriguez before the Alex Caceres fight. So it's been, I think, 11 months since he fought. But every time we've seen him, there's difference. I mean, he had a better leg kick that last time, started switching profiles. I know now he can fight as left-handed. He can fight right-handed. I think we're going to see an evolution of a guy that if he gets a couple fights in, maybe we'd be talking again of having a top 15 bantamweight from Mexico after Goyito Perez.
So, man, there's some stuff to watch. I do think there is going to be some sneaky good fights on it. You know, I think I'm hoping, fingers crossed, at the end of the night, you know, Saturday night, we're going to be like, that was fun. You know what I mean? Stylistically, I think there's some
hopefully,
fun
hopefully, because with the ticket sales, if it sucks, it's going to be awful.
It's going to be bad. But, you know, you're always my go-to Mexican MMA expert. So give me your feeling overall right now. Are you a little concerned? Are you just understanding that this is a process? This is a transitionary period? I mean, this is your life, you know, your livelihood. This is the sport that you've chosen to cover. It's right here in your backyard. I mean, are you optimistic even with all the crap that's going on? Give me the overall summary.
The fans are there. Like, I also work with Claro Sports. Claro Sports, I do play-by-play for one championship. We just bought one championship. This Saturday is going to be our third one championship event. With UM One Challenge, they always do good numbers. They're some of the best programming we have at Claro as numbers go. They really do good. So the fans are there. Bellator, I know they do good numbers, like even if people don't really follow it like they follow UFC. Combat Americas, I don't know, because you've seen the quality of Combat Americas.
Yeah.
I hate the way they talk to people. I hate the way they deceive people. Like, I remember Campbell saying, oh, this is the first time ESPN Latin America is going to show MMA. Jesus, they showed Jungle Fight for 6 years. They showed Jungle Fight for 6 years.
It's just not true.
No. That's the first time. And we do millions of people of TV because we're in TV Azteca. First of all, they're on tape delay. They air one day later in Mexico. They don't air the whole card. They space it out for weeks. And the infomercial that sells you a bed sheet at 1 a.m. in the morning in TV Azteca is only watched by a million people. It's free-to-air TV. It doesn't mean that you matter. You know, and I'm saying this because Combat Americas will be a good trampoline for Latin talent, for Mexican talent. There's Marcelo Rojo from The Ultimate Fighter. Just won 2 in a row in Combat Americas. He's close to UFC. He's training with Enter. I mean, it happened. Just chill. But the fans are there. The fans are there. It's a transition. We'll see what happens with Fox. And we'll see how people react. I mean, I think I'm not a fan of the Mexican Fox Sports coverage. They do a good job in the States. They would do a good job in the States in Spanish with Fox Deportes. But we'll see. We'll see. I think it's a transition, and I think the numbers will recover once they go to Fox.
Man, you've got the inside. I always love getting to sit down and talk with you. You bring all the details. So if you're not following him on Twitter, at Rod Del Campo,
yes,
right?
Sir.
That's the best one. And, of course, Indiscutido.com for Spanish language coverage. Can't thank you enough, brother.
Thank you. Just wanted to plug one more thing.
Of course.
We're actually making, I don't know if it's history, but I think it's the first time it's going to happen. We're calling the UFC fight on radio, for Mexican radio. It's the first time it's airing in radio. It's going to be Carlos Contreras Legazpi, who you've known for a couple of years, and me doing the play-by-play and the analyst.
Shit, I didn't even know.
For W Deportes, which is Televisa Radio. Got the rights for this fight. We'll do this fight. We're going to do it octagon side. We'll see how it goes, and hopefully they can get to an agreement with the UFC to do more shows. So we're going to do this one for radio in Mexico. If you're in Mexico City, it's 7:30 a.m. or 10:10 a.m. in Guadalajara. If you're in Mexico, bring a radio to the arena. You can hear us from there. But it's also going to be streaming.
Good idea, because you don't get the play-by-play when you're in the arena.
So you can bring, or with your phone, like in tuning radio or everything, or you can go to play.wdeportes.com, play.wdeportes.com. We're going to have the first two fights. We're going to have a break for the middle prelims because we had soccer. And then we're going to come back for the main event. So I'm calling on Saturday, 7:30 a.m. Mexico Central Time. If you want to go to marcaclaro.com, you can see One Championship live with yours truly, Juan Carlos Castellano, Alfredo Busch, doing play-by-play. That's seven fights. Then at 1 p.m., we're calling M1 Challenge 82. That's five
fights.
No,
you're not.
And then at 6 p.m., I'm going to the Arena Ciudad de Mexico to the UFC show.
You're calling three cards in one day.
20 fights. Dude, if you saw my schedule at Rio, this is nothing.
Oh, that's
Taekwondo
amazing.
At Rio was 13 hours of airtime a day.
Jesus Christ.
A day.
That's
for
nuts.
For 3 days. So.
Okay, Rod, really, like, I'm glad I got you now because I'm certainly not getting you on Saturday,
You're
man.
Getting me. No, Saturday, no.
Hope you heard this show because we'll never get this man again. He's blowing up. He's a big star out
every
there.
Every single time. Every single time I'll be here. Thank you. I really appreciate the invite. I mean, you're the one that when in Discutil was absolutely nothing and I was just trying to, you know, knock on doors and get help and get everyone. You're one of the ones who invited me. So I have really appreciated it for all these years.
Bro, you keep doing what you're doing because you're on the grind and your knowledge is much respected. So
thanks, sir.
Hopefully, however many people show up on Saturday night, we'll all enjoy you.
If we have a good show, it was all worth it. That's it. Let's just have a good show.
Welcome back to the MMA Road Show. What did I tell you? If you haven't heard Rodrigo Del Campo before, man, give that man a follow. He'll do some social media and stuff in English at Rod Del Campo. So, you know, he'll have some updates there. He does some Spanish as well, of course. That's his primary audience. His site is a Spanish language site. But if you're so inclined, maybe you read some Spanish, or hell, maybe you just need to practice your Spanish. Maybe you're like me and your son is completely bilingual and you're not. And you probably need to figure out, or your son and your wife are going to be talking shit about you, and you won't be able to know. If you're like that, you can go to his site, indiscusito.com, or follow him on social media. He's a bright man, and I always appreciate picking his brain a little bit. And as you can see, a busy man. Good Lord, the man's going to be calling 3 fight cards on Saturday? Dude, I don't envy that. I miss calling fight cards. I do love it. That's something I used to really love to do. And I'm bummed that I don't get to do it anymore, but 3 in a day would be quite a bit. So if you like what you've heard so far, make sure you hook up Rod Del Campo. Also, do me a favor. Go into iTunes, all right? Log in. Subscribe to us. Rate us. Review us. That helps us out. That helps us get seen by the masses. Helps us grow the show. Helps us, you know, grow the fan base a little bit. And always like a little bit. If you don't mind, I know everybody's kind of shy about leaving comments or whatever, but if you don't mind, go in there and leave a quick little review. It makes me feel so good. You could be like Steve in Detroit. He left 5 stars. Thank you, Steve. He said, I have about 5 or so MMA podcasts that I listen to regularly, and the MMA Roadshow is my favorite. I love MMA Junkie, and it's great to get so much content from John Morgan in addition to his articles on the site. Always fresh content week over and week out, and their laid-back format is just my style. Steve in Detroit. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you taking the time to do that. Much, much respect. All right, listen. So I feel like we talked a lot about UFC Fight Night 114. We did have a post-fight show on UFC 214, the incredible show that was UFC 214. But afterwards, I reached out to Volkan Oezdemir, who said, you know, he wanted to kind of have a little follow-up if we could. You know, I didn't get to see him backstage. The way we do the press conferences now, we only got to see the top 3 fights. Cole Coffey spoke to him. But I've been fortunate enough to be at all of Volkan's fights. I think I did one of his first interviews just because it was the Super Bowl card. There was no media down there. It's one of the reasons I like coming to these shows. I'm not going to lie. I love the big shows, man, but I love coming to the small shows too because I get to meet these guys and really kind of pick their brains a little bit and kind of develop relationships for the future. And Volkan Oezdemir is one of the guys I got to do that with. So we kind of got in touch together this week, and I wanted to kind of follow up with him and see what's on his mind and see how he felt about another great performance. The guy told me, if you read the article that I put together, a quick one before the event, you know, he said, hey, signed a new contract, and now I'm going to go out there and I'm going to shock Jimmy Manoa. I'm going to knock him out in the first round. Son of a gun if he didn't do it. So definitely owed Volkan Oezdemir a phone call, and we had a quick conversation talking about what he's accomplished, and then kind of going back a little bit, you know, tell us a little bit about his background. Where did the no time come from? How the hell did he even get in MMA? How does a Swiss dude get involved in MMA? Switzerland's so nice. Supposed to be playing tennis or something, right? And guess how much the box of chocolates he brought cost? You're not going to believe this. Insane. Volkan Oezdemir.
Hey, John.
Hey, Volkan. How you doing, man?
I'm good, and you?
I'm doing real well, man. It's still a good time for you?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, let's just get into it, man. How happy are you right now? I mean, I can't imagine things could have gone any better for you than to get in there and win that fast.
Yeah, I mean that's amazing. It's pretty crazy. I think every piece of the puzzle finally forming a piece, you know. So, and that's everything I was trying to plan. You know, everything I tried to plan is like realizing, coming together right now.
That's incredible, man. It's afterwards, you know, you kind of talked to Joe Rogan and said that you thought you'd be able to hurt him in the clinch. Is that where you felt you'd be most dangerous?
No, actually, when I first, I was trying to say that I was watching the fight analysis from Cormier and Jones.
Yeah.
You know, they always show what technique they usually use and stuff. And I saw both of those guys were using the right underhook and the left uppercut, you know, the clinch. And then I was looking at those movements, and I was like, wow, that's a nice technique, actually. They're scoring a lot. And I want to do the same, you know. And then I start thinking a lot about this technique and try to come up with my version of it. And I think it just happened during the fight.
So is that something you've been working in practice at all, or you just kind of thought, let me throw this in here?
Only in my head.
That's amazing.
But I've practiced a thousand times already in my head.
That is awesome, man. I mean, this power that you're throwing, I mean, have you always known yourself to be this kind of a powerful dude, a knockout artist like this? Or is it, you know, you're working with Henry Hooft? I mean, where is this coming from?
I mean, working with Henry definitely helped me a lot, you know. But I always had the knockout power and the will. You know, the will to kill. So I was always like really, you know, I was fighting a lot when I was younger, you know, in the street and stuff like that. And that's also why I thought, you know, fighting sports, you know, because I had to calm down and, you know, like be more, you know, aware of, you know, maybe, you know, be able to handle myself. But that's also how I also realized that, you know, I could do something with it, with my life.
You seem like the nicest guy ever, man. You used to go out and mix it up on the streets a little bit?
No, yeah, but I was always thinking I'm the strongest guy.
Well, how did you get in the sport? I mean, you grew up in Switzerland, right? I mean, I can't imagine there's much of a scene there in Switzerland in MMA.
No, actually, I always did the sports as for pleasure, and then I traveled to Thailand for vacation. I trained over there. Then a year later, I wanted to travel one more time, but Thailand was a little bit expensive for me, so I went to Netherlands, and that's where I met Overeem. And then I trained with him for like 4 weeks, and then they really liked me over there, and they told me, "Hey, you're good. Why don't you fight?" And I say, I don't know, I never thought about it. And they planned me a fight 6 weeks later. I mean, after I came back, I had a 6 week training camp, and then I had my first fight, and then I fell in love with it.
That's amazing. Is that fight in Schudo, Switzerland that you won in 56 seconds?
No, that was another fight in amateur. I did three amateur fights first.
Nice. Did you win all three?
Yeah,
2-1. 2-1. And then what made you decide to go pro? I mean, you said, hey, 2-1's pretty good. I think I can do this?
Yeah. I just like challenge.
That's awesome. And along your pro ranks, I mean, have you had to work jobs and things like that to help pay the bills, or have you been focused on fighting the whole time?
Yeah, I was working until the UFC, actually. So yeah, I was always like trying to do, you know, everything at the same time, you know, like my career, but also, you know, be able to leave and have a kind of a future, you know, like just securing something and stuff like that. But, you know, it was always about my dream first, and I kept on believing, you know, all the time. And it was hard a few times because, you know, also we don't get a lot of money from smaller show, and then there's a lot of cancellation and some stuff happening, you know, injuries and stuff. So it was hard, but that's also when it's hard that you really that you really know if you really doing it or not, because it's only when it's hard that you know if you're ready to give up or not. You know, it's easy to say I'm never gonna give up when everything is beautiful, but that's where I knew I really wanted to do this, and I kept on believing, and finally it's happening. You know.
No doubt. So what has this 6 months been like for you? I mean, it's just 6 months that you've been in the UFC, and you got these three wins, and you're ranked high now. I mean, what has this been like for you? Has it been overwhelming? Has it been fun? I mean, what's the feeling?
It's been fun. I like it.
You like that paycheck that you got, too? That new contract looked pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, I worked with the UFC, and I think that trust. That they trust me, and I told them it was also something that could be going bad for me, and I told them, but I knew I'll do good, and then they trust me, and now I'm really happy with it.
Well, that's fantastic. You debuted your new nickname, No Time. Where did that come together? Who did you come up with that one, or did somebody give it to you? How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, my friends were already calling me like this back in the day, because I was finishing a lot of people, in the first round. And actually, it happened when I was fighting Denmark in the tournament. And I fought three guys in one night. Everybody was under 1 minute. And that's where the first time the nickname was came,
Yep.
Then I forgot a little bit about it. Then I think that's also when I started losing motivation, in my life. And then I think I did more annoying fights or decision, And then finally now I start, finding myself, and I think I find my old self.
No doubt. When did you start your routine of giving guys chocolates at the weigh-ins?
I mean, every time I was trying to go somewhere, in the country for fight, I was always bringing chocolates to the people around, because for a sign of respect, and also because just to be nice, I guess.
Right.
And then I gave to some of my opponents the first time really in a big show was OSP. And now it was Manoa, and Manoa, I gave some pretty good chocolate. It was really expensive. Well, the box was $150, and he didn't even took them, so I got mad.
That's an expensive box of chocolates.
It's really expensive. It's a luxurious one, really high quality, and he didn't even took it.
So what did you do? Did you end up eating them?
I mean, yeah, you said a fight. But, got me mad.
It's funny. I was going to say, is it a little bit of a psychological thing there? If they don't accept your gift, it kind of frustrates you a little?
Yeah, I mean, the next one, we'll better accept it.
Well, listen, I know you said you wanted to get yourself working towards a title shot, and you got to see the champion in action right after you, so... man, just give me your impressions watching John Jones compete. I mean, the guy is obviously incredible at what he does. What did you think about his win over Cormier?
I think the win was great. The first one was for him. Then I didn't even know what to think anymore. Cormier was coming back a little bit, but then the kick was a game changer. The kick was I was like, wow, Just landed perfectly, and then he was really smart. He was like John Jones, as usual, with the leg trip. That was really well, placed. Good timing, no rush. He went there, precisely finished Cormier. That was really nice. So, yes?
No, go ahead.
So, yeah, I really think he did a great performance.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there's a lot of people that say he may be the best ever. And I wonder, knowing that you want to challenge yourself and you want to be champion, I mean, how do you get yourself ready for a guy like that? I mean, is it intimidating at all? Is it concerning at all to see, hey, man, I've only been in the UFC for 6 months, and that guy might be the best ever?
Yeah, but everybody has two arms and two legs, so, you know, why would you stop yourself and thinking the guy is, like, untouchable or something, you know, like, he's like everybody, you know, he's training hard, he has his day on and off, and like everyone, so, you know, it's like everybody is beatable.
Mm-hmm. I know that you said coming in that you realize Alexander Gustafsson has kind of been there, and he's probably the rightful number one contender. Do you still feel that way, that Alex probably deserves the next shot, or do you feel like maybe you've done enough to get the next shot?
I mean, with my victory, so I also said that hopefully I'll do a strong impression enough that I will steal his spot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was it, you know? I think that was a really strong impression. Gustafsson last fight was a 4-1 fight against Glover, you know? And it was a good fight, though, but this one, mine was, like, just straight destruction.
Yep.
And I think that since Manuel was, you know, the supposed to be fighting for the belt after the fight, and now I beat him, you know, I deserve also the shot. But then I also hear that John Jones is willing to fight Lesnar, so that's why it's getting a little bit complicated right now.
Yeah, what do you think about that? When you heard that, I mean, does that frustrate you a little? I mean, the guy just came in and just won the belt back, and now he's talking about moving to another division?
Yeah, it's really crazy. Hopefully we're gonna have, like, an interim belt if he has to keep the, you know, the belt away for a long time, because Lesnar is not coming back for soon because he's still suspended, right?
Right. Yeah, he's probably got 6 months or so. So you think maybe an interim belt in the meantime, or
I think Jones is interested in money fights right now, like Connell, and that's why he's choosing Brock Lesnar. I think he has nothing to gain against me. It's a super, super dangerous fight for him. I think he saw my knockout power. Anything can happen in MMA. I got no name compared to him, or compared to Gustafsson even, and obviously compared to Brock Lesnar. So it's a really dangerous fight for him. So of course you want to go for the money fight, which is Lesnar or maybe Gustafsson. Even Gustafsson has a better name than me. So and they have history. So that's why also I was thinking maybe the best way for me is to go Gustafsson first. So then we can see who's the real challenger for the belt. Jones can he's able to take care of his business with Lesnar, make some good money, and then I'm going to come for him.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you beat Gustafsson, there's no argument at all, right? I mean, there's nobody else that could even say they have a case.
Yeah, and also what I like about the matchup is, like, we were the three fighters from Europe that were in the top 10, or top 5, and now I beat one of them, and there is one more left, and now we need to see who's the real king of Europe.
I like it. Do you think it would need to be for an interim title, or you think you'd be okay just if it was like a main event, a number one contender fight?
Interim title, if John Jones is going away, it will be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be a great fight. So what do you do for now? Do you just kind of, I mean, obviously, I guess you got to be healthy. I can't imagine you're injured or anything like that. So what do you do in the meantime? Just kind of hang out and wait to hear what's next?
I was training this morning.
Already back at it.
Yeah, I did an overnight flight and I came back to the gym. And I was moving around, you know, like burning all the calories I ate after the fight. yeah, I feel good. You know, I get no injuries. I'm healthy and I'm more than motivated, you know.
When do you think would be a good time for you to fight again?
I want to fight before the end of the year for sure.
Right. Trying to think of what card might make sense. I mean, I guess there's that card in Poland, but that's a fight pass card. I imagine if it was you two guys, especially if it was an interim title, they'd at least want it to be on Fox, if not a pay-per-view, right?
Yeah, no, of course. I think that's two big names. The Poland card is in December, right? And then there is the Madison Square Garden, maybe in November.
Yeah, maybe Madison Square Garden.
then what else?
Maybe end of the year in Vegas?
Yeah, end of the year, the 30, right?
Yeah.
That would be also amazing.
So maybe November in Madison Square Garden or December in Vegas might be a good time for you.
And finishing the year with some good paycheck.
I like it. So what do you do in your spare time? Do you live pretty much in Florida full time now, or do you ever go back home to Switzerland, or how do you spend your time?
So I go in Switzerland because I want to work some media stuff, you know, some promotional stuff, and also I'm starting to build a good network over there. So I know I can do some good stuff in the future. And but also everybody is in vacation right now. It's summertime, so I'm gonna go back in September, and just for 2 or 3 weeks. And in the meantime, I'm gonna keep on training, and I'm gonna take my vacation after that.
Are you becoming well known over there? I mean, does the news coverage do they cover you? Do they keep track of your career, or is MMA not mainstream yet?
Yeah, I mean, I did the 2 times in a row now the front page of the biggest newspaper after the fight, and I'm regularly front page of the sports
cool.
section. And but the front page of the biggest was one of the best also, you know, twice. And it's becoming really big.
That's cool. I mean, do people recognize you when you walk down the street and things like that?
Yeah. Especially in my city, that's crazy, and then in other city too, yeah.
It's got to be kind of a weird feeling for you.
Yeah, especially because I don't live there anymore, kind of, you know. So when it's okay because I'm not coming back that often. But it's crazy actually.
So let's say they do Gustafson Jones. What do you do if it is Alexander and John Jones? Do you just kind of wait and see what happens, or do you try to keep yourself busy?
I'm not gonna wait. You know me. I'm gonna get busy. You know, I got no time to wait. So that's something I need to think about it, because I just keep on dreaming, or not dreaming, but like hoping, like visualizing that it's gonna be Jones or Gustafsson, that I don't even think about nobody else, and I'm gonna do all the work that I can so I can get what I want.
Very cool, man. All right, brother. Well, I appreciate it, man. It's good to catch up with you. It's been fun to watch this fast rise to the top, man. Any other last thoughts or messages or anything you want to make sure we get out there for you?
I just want to, like, thanks everybody that followed me also after that win and messaged me, because my social media blown up, and that's pretty crazy. I'm really happy about that, and yes.
You got it, Vulcan. Awesome, man. All right, brother. We'll put this out, and hopefully we'll get a big fight book for you real soon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Talk to you soon, Vulcan. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Vulcan Ozdemir. Hopefully you enjoyed that conversation. Good dude. I enjoyed talking to that guy. And, my God, as he made it quick up the light heavyweight ranks. Incredible. Listen, a lot of conversation this week in the news about Conor McGregor. It's been funny to hear the stories. You know, I spoke to some people that were at that sparring session. That's right. I spoke to some people. Those walls, they have eyes, ears? How does that go? The walls have eyes? The walls have ears. The walls. I'm going with eyes. The walls have eyes. All right. But that was this hearing thing. Fuck it. There were people there that I know. How about that? Talking about the sparring session with Pauly Malignaggi. You know, they said it was intense. Now, the people that I talked to admit, not, you know, it's a sparring session. So it's not quite like hitting a bag where people were trying to learn too much about hitting a bag. But, it is a sparring session. It is against an opponent that's going hard, but not going 100%. But they did say, you know, the I think it was Joe Cortez, the referee, that came out and said, hey, it was getting a little chippy in there. It was getting a little rough. And, you know, I think some people are like, oh, come on, what's this guy talking about? This is full of shit. Now, from what I heard, it was pretty rough. They were going at it. And Malignaggi had some marks on him afterwards. It's kind of showing the power of Conor McGregor in there. So some interesting stuff in there. The funniest stories are really just about, you know, Connor's got that place to himself. So, you know, they're being very secretive, as you would expect. You know, curtains are drawn. People are not allowed in. You know, anybody that's there using it, you know, it's not that they're getting kicked out because Connor is booking actual time. It's not like he's just showing up when he wants to show up. But when he shows up, everybody's got to go. He parks the green Lamborghini just right out there in front of the door. Doesn't bother putting it in a parking space. Just right in the middle of the parking lot. Which, it's not a packed parking lot, but it's just still so funny. You could easily pull it into a parking spot, bro. But he doesn't do that. So, there's some stuff to talk about there, but I feel like we're about to get super heavy on Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather content. So I don't want to go too much into that right now. There is some workouts next week, which I'm excited about. MMA Junkie will certainly have full coverage of that. There will be one day next week will be a Conor McGregor open workout in Las Vegas. Well, I say open workout. It's a media workout. It's not open, so fans are not allowed in. But there will be a Conor McGregor workout. There will also be a Floyd Mayweather workout the next day. They're both in separate locations, and they're both on separate days. But we'll have full coverage of that. Cole Coffey will be there filming everything. My understanding is there's going to be some scrums. I'm sure it's going to be a madhouse, but it'll be more content, and it won't be the over-the-top theatrics we saw at the press conference. So I'm excited for that. I'm really honestly surprised that Conor McGregor is doing a workout. I really am, and I'm anxious to kind of see what he ends up doing in the workout because, you know, we knew next week was going to be a slow week, so I was going to try to reach out to the camp, the team, see if we could get anything, you know, just something at all to kind of get ready for this fight. Because, I mean, this fight, let's be honest, it's the whole month is basically geared around Mayweather-McGregor. And, you know, I wanted to try to get some kind of workout footage. The fact that they're doing a media workout with cameras and all that stuff, I'm anxious to see because I really believe, you know, Conor's biggest asset, I guess, in this fight is the element of surprise, right? I mean, Floyd Mayweather has absolutely no idea what to expect on the other side of the ring. He doesn't know, you know, he's likely going to see a southpaw, but maybe not. Maybe Conor has been boxing traditional stance, you know? He doesn't know, is he going to move like he does when he's in the UFC? When he's in mixed martial arts, is he going to strike a similar stance, or is he going to try to do something a little different, you know? So, I'll be anxious to see how much of an actual workout we see. You know, will the workout be more just hitting the bags? You know, I don't know. I would think that Conor's going to try to play it close to the vest. I would think he's going to try not to show too much, but we'll see. We'll see. We're bound to get some nice sound bites on both days for sure. Hopefully we'll get some time with the coaches as well. We'll try to do as much as we can around that, but just know that that's coming. And then the week after that, again, the Tuesday night contender series will continue, which is good. We'll keep us with some live fights going on. But my understanding is they are going to do some conference calls the following week. So the media that's not in Vegas or can't get to Vegas, they'll have the opportunity to speak to the fighters as well. And then it'll be fight week. It'll be time for Mayweather McGregor. The circus will be in town in Las Vegas. My understanding as of right now, they'll do a grand arrivals, which if you've never seen that, it's kind of a boxing tradition. They just do a big arrival into the lobby of MGM Grand. Kind of a madhouse, you know, but it's a publicity scene. It looks cool, you know, to let everybody know that, hey, the fights are in town. And then just do like a, you know, brief scrum or what have you, you know, not very long, but just, you know, a couple quick minutes. So they'll have that on Tuesday. I think they'll do more of a formal press conference on Wednesday of fight week. And then I think there'll be some undercard workouts on Thursday, weigh-ins on Friday, which I believe boxing weigh-ins are just one weigh-in. I could be wrong in that, but I don't think they do the early weigh-in situation the way they do in MMA. I should probably check on that. But I think it's only one way in because I don't ever remember them going through that process before. But I don't cover a lot of boxing, so who knows. And then, of course, Saturday will be the fights. And we're still hoping. Fingers crossed. We don't have our credentials yet. But we are – myself and Cold Coffee have both applied. I think the young Mike Bond is trying to make it down as well. So we'll see. Hopefully everybody's credentials get approved. And, you know, we'll cover everything one way or another, that's for sure. We'll have everything we can. But yeah, it's probably going to get pretty heavy May Mac talk for the next couple weeks. And, hey, I guess deservedly so. But in the meantime, it's UFC Fight Night 114. Hey, if you're a Mexican fan, you heard Rodrigo probably not coming back in 2018. So if you don't have a ticket and you're in the area and you want to see the USC, might go ahead and pull the trigger on buying some tickets. Otherwise, I think there's some fun cards on here, some fun fights on this card. I think it's going to be entertaining. I think at the end of the night, we're going to say we had a good time. But I get it. It's not superstar laden, but the fights that we talked about, I am interested in Pettis and Moreno. I went back and forth. If you pay attention to the staff picks that come out tomorrow, you'll notice it on the board. I picked Moreno because we have to turn in our picks for like a week in advance. I picked Moreno, and then I recorded a pick to put in Abby's video, and I picked Sergio Pettis. I totally forgot I had picked Moreno. I've been going back and forth, and in my head I thought I had picked Pettis. I had actually picked Moreno. So I have a written pick of Brandon Moreno and a verbal pick of Sergio Pettis, which means I guess I'm covered either way. I guess I got the winner down, but that's how even I think this fight is. I was really surprised to see Moreno as the favorite. Just talking with Pettis this week, man, confidence is on point. Demeanor is there. And like I said, he was getting ready for a big fight with Henry Cejudo. But Brandon Moreno just keeps proving people wrong, man. Keeps proving people wrong. Alexa Grasso, Brandon Marcos should be fun. I love what Grasso had to say to me this week, admitting that she had been too cautious and is getting over that because she wants to fight. Joe Bannon Price just looks like it's got to entertain. Rashad Evans, so much on the line there. Sam Alvey, a good dude. Adopting another kid, by the way. Guy's already got kids, and he's adopting another one. Dude wants a whole team, man. It's crazy. Check out all those interviews. I got all those interviews on YouTube. So, anyway, listen, I won't ramble on here. We'll wrap this bad boy up since my man Cole Coffey's not here. I hate rolling solo. I like having my homeboy with me to rattle things off. Otherwise, I feel like I'm just boring the shit out of everybody. Hopefully that's not the case. And if you stuck through, whether you were entertained or not, maybe you were just doing it because you felt sorry for me, or maybe you're my mom. That's okay, too. No matter what the reason is, you're still here right now. Thanks for listening.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.